Triple M Rocks Saturday Arvo Footy. Triple M Rocks the Footy. For Harvey Norman Home Appliances.
The head of football for the NRL, Graham Annesley. G'day, Graham.
Hey, Tony. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Some terrific games of footy over the past few nights. Some nice close games, obviously, for your Dragon support, and not so great last night. Have you enjoyed the start to this round, though?
Well, I think the football's been excellent. You know, I don't think anyone could say that they're not getting their money's worth. So, but the competition's very tight, and we're at that end of the season where every game's critically important. So, I guess we've got to expect tight games.
Indeed, and obviously with each of those games, and especially when they're tight and there's a lot on the line, every decision is then put under the microscope, 1,000 television shows, 1,000 radio shows, 1,000,000 newspapers, yep. It's all there. Let's start with the Kalyn Ponga. Now, he was sin-binned for that, what was, you know, the try-saving attempt, the same as Matt Dufty with the Dragons the week before, who wasn't sin-binned, but there is no charge for him. Can you just talk us through the on-field decision of the sin-bin, and then the decision for him not to have to face the judiciary?
Yeah, well, to the extent that I can, obviously I haven't spoken to any of the officials, and I wasn't at the game, so I was watching it in my living room like many of your listeners. But from phone calls that I've made this morning and from my understanding of what took place, the match officials have to deal with these things in a relatively short period of time on the field. They were confronted with advice from the bunker that the shoulder had made contact with the head. We had obviously what on the face of it was a relatively serious injury, and they have to determine what action to take on that. As I said, they only have a relatively short time to make that decision, so in some ways you can understand that decision, but the reason that we have a two-step process where officials make decisions on the field and then they're reviewed off the field after the game by the match review committee that have an unlimited amount of time and all of the available camera angles to go through it in great detail, they decided that there wasn't sufficient evidence to proceed with a charge. And I'm fine with that. That's our process, and that's why we have a built-in protection for players.
So, Graham, that's where the difference is between, obviously, the incident last night and the Dufty incident the week before, where with Dufty it was a blatant shoulder charge, but there was no contact with the head. So that's where those two incidences differ. But another incident that we had last week was the Kikau one. Now, he got 2 weeks suspension for a shoulder to the head. So where's the difference between the Ponga and the Kikau incident?
Well, I mean, if you look at the footage of both, they're two very different incidents.
Yes.
And, you know, in the case last night, we had three players all converging at the same time in a desperate attempt to prevent a try from being scored, or in the case of the attacking player trying to score a try. And in the course of that, the match review committee obviously feel that contact was unavoidable, even though there was shoulder-to-head contact. They feel that it was unavoidable. And, there are such things as accidents in our game.
Yep.
In the case last week, and I can't speak for the deliberations that the judiciary panel took place behind closed doors. I don't know what they discussed, but it was a very different type of tackle. It wasn't in the in-goal area, and that's a matter that they're charged with responsibility for determining. And you've got at the judiciary, you've got three very experienced players who hear all the evidence and then take it all into consideration.
Graham, does the actual, we talk about injury, does it officially come into it? Well, the result, the impact of what's happened when you're deciding, the match review committee's deciding?
Absolutely, it comes into it. I mean, it's written into the judiciary code that when they're determining grading for offence, firstly, they have to determine whether an offence has occurred or not, and they can deem any offence to be accidental or, unavoidable, and in which case they won't proceed with a charge. But where they feel there's been careless or reckless or intentional act that's taken place, then they have to look at grading, and it says very clearly in the code that one of the aspects, there are many aspects that they take into consideration to reach grading, but one of those is the extent of any injury caused as a result.
Graham, just to clarify, the rule is different if you're in a try-scoring action, the shoulder charge rule, compared to if you're just in the middle of the field. Is that correct? And why is there the difference? Because some may argue, well, a shoulder charge is a shoulder charge and it puts a player in a dangerous situation, whether they're in the act of scoring a try or not.
Yeah, no, the rule's not different. The circumstances are obviously different. I mean, one of the things I talked about at our Monday review last week, and I showed a number of incidents where there had been side-on contact with the shoulder, as we saw in the famous Billy Slater incident leading up to the grand final last year in an attempt to stop a try. So that's kind of shoulder to shoulder or shoulder to body on the side on. As you will recall, Billy Slater was found not guilty of an offence in that case. And there have been a number of other cases of similar types of tackles. And what we talked about both at the review that we did of the judiciary in the off-season and what I spoke about last Monday was, you know, is that really the type of tackle that we set out to eliminate when we banned the shoulder charge? And, you know, the guys on the panel will recall when they've been on the field themselves that, you know, that the traditional shoulder charge was front on, no attempt to wrap the arms around an oncoming ball carrier, but basically just to drop the shoulder into him and hit him as hard as possible. And that was the original intent of banning the shoulder charge. But shoulder to head contact will always be considered more serious than obviously shoulder to any other part of the body.
So, Graeme, we're obviously seeing a crackdown in certain instances, and that's basically the Kick Hour one and the Sims one over the last couple of weeks. So there's a new mandate now. Now, who comes up with the decision to make those changes? How is that applied, and how do we get some consistency throughout? Obviously, there's a lot of different people involved when you've got the match review committee, you've got the referees, you've got the guys sitting up there in the box. We've got all these moving parts. How do we get some consistency through these new mandates that we're seeing come into the game?
Well, look, you know, consistency is a very often used term when it comes to the rules on the field. But not every incident is the same, as we've just discussed. You know, we've seen two very different types of incidents in two consecutive weeks where both could have been, you know, viewed as a particular type of charge, but they're very different types of incidents. So in relation to the first part of your question, how are these things decided?
Yep.
It was reviewed by the competition committee halfway through the season. There was a view from the commission that we were seeing too many incidents where ball players, whether they be halfbacks or kickers that were being hit after they'd released the ball, either from a kick or a pass, and they wanted that to be treated more firmly. The competition committee reviewed that and made a recommendation back to the commission, and the commission signs off on a policy statement. That policy statement gets distributed to all the clubs, gets distributed to the referees, gets distributed to the media so that everyone knows what the new expectation is. It also advise the judiciary panel that they should not be bound by precedent. So one of the objectives of the judiciary panel and the match review committee is to grade incidents in a similar manner to previous incidents that have similar attributes. And so the instruction that went to the judiciary was to ignore precedents and set a new bar, a new level of what's acceptable. And that's how it comes about. But then you do rely, the last part of your question, you rely very heavily on people to interpret that and to interpret it as consistently as possible.
Hey, Graeme, it's Wendell Saylor, mate. I just want to take the focus away from that a bit. Belinda Sharp, wonderful appointment. Wonderful appointment. And also Casey Badger, over the years, you know, we've seen the females, you know, in and around the game, but just the way that she carried herself, obviously the way that she ref that game, I think it was well done to all involved. So Casey Badger shouldn't be too far away, you'd think?
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. I mean, obviously, she has to wait for an opportunity. And I know that she and Belinda were both at kind of similar stages of development. And so I'm sure it's not going to be long before we see Casey getting her opportunity as well. But you're right about Belinda. I mean, it was a big step to appoint, you know, the first female on-field referee in the 110-year history of the game. It's something that will remain part of the history of the game forevermore. And I thought she handled herself magnificently, both leading up to the game and on the field and following the game. I mean, the media appearances that she did, the way she responded to media inquiries, you know, I think brought nothing but credit to the game and herself.
Yeah, she was. It was a good news refereeing story, which is terrific in the season. And Graeme, you have been upfront and honest about performances of referees throughout the season. You talked about depth, and you can't just go dropping people because you may not have the people who are better to come up and blow the whistle in the NRL. When you say those sorts of things, how have they responded? Is it like when Madge McGuire has a crack at the Tigers, and then they come out and play better the next week? Is there a response to those kinds of calls?
Well, Tony, hard to gauge that. I mean, obviously every week the referees are going out there trying not to make errors. So, you know, we had a couple of weeks back-to-back that were pretty ordinary, and I think everyone accepted that, including the referees. So my comments were just an acknowledgement of that publicly. I said at the start of the year that we would put our hand up when errors were made and we wouldn't try and defend them. There are times where I have tried to defend them based on the circumstances where we think they're defensible. The referees know that they're in a very difficult position. They are trying their best, and they will make errors. I mean, they make errors every time they go onto the field. They don't get through 80 minutes of football without having in some way or other, hopefully to a very minor degree, made some kind of error. But we saw a couple of weeks where those errors were pretty significant, and they had potentially impacts on the outcome of games, and that's what everyone's trying to avoid.
All right, Graeme Annesley, as ever, nice to talk to you. Thanks for giving up your time again to have a chat.
Thanks, Graeme.
No problem. Anytime, guys. Thank you.
Cheers, mate.